This year, the National Women's History Month theme is Women Who Advocate for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion. This theme recognizes women who understand the need to eliminate bias and discrimination from individuals' lives and institutions. Pakistani female education activist, Nobel Peace Prize laureate, Malala Yousafzai believed one child, one teacher, one book, one pen can change the world. Welcome everyone to First Online with Fran. I'm Fran McGarry, host and arts advocate, dedicated to making our world a deeper, richer, kinder place to live. My guest today is Ellen Kaplan. She's a scholar, playwright, director, and actress, and she works extensively with underserved and at-risk communities. Welcome, Ellen.
And thank you, Fran.
Welcome to celebrating Women's History Month. Let's start off our conversation with how your outreach programs pay tribute to women who understand the need to eliminate bias and discrimination from individuals' lives and institutions by focusing on vulnerable communities. How do you honor those brave women who have challenged, advocated opportunities to create healing spaces and promote self-expression?
I love that you brought up Malala, because as you know, I just got back from Pakistan, where one of the projects I was doing, and it was fabulous, was staging five stories from Ismat Chughtai, who was in the 20th century a major, one of the four pillars of Urdu fiction. She's considered a feminist, sometimes a Marxist, very much committed to women's education and women's freedom in Pakistan and in the subcontinent and everywhere. Her work was extraordinary and acclaimed. What we did, this particular project, was working with 24 graduate students at IVS, which is Valley School of Art and Architecture, and to create a play based on five of her stories. I worked with the actors to adapt, to script, to stage, to perform these stories for a large, large audience that, and I will say, first of all, I talked with my actors at length about the patriarchal conditions in Pakistan and at lots of places. But in addition to really investigating and talking through the kinds of legacies of patriarchy, it led us to work on these stories in ways that were full of humor and love and passion. The fifth of the five that we did, the quilt, and that Chughtai was brought up on obscenity charges in the middle of the 20th century because the story looks up kind of with affection and a degree of laughter, but looks at a woman, in particular, a middle-aged woman who's ignored by her husband, who's placed in a room and basically has to stay there, and who ends up expressing her own sexual desires with another woman, a servant in the house. But it was not possible to do this in a way that was too overt, but we did it. And I was told by the U.S. consul that a collection of old ladies who sat behind him chuckled and chortled and loved it, which in this very conservative culture, we managed to both do it and do it in a way that was delicate and yet very clear. And that, I think, is a great example of the kind of work I love doing, the inspiration that it gives to me and that I think to the performers, most of whom, not all of whom, but most of whom were young women, actually. But that's one example, I think, and very much on my mind because I just included that. I also performed there and I also gave lectures and Shakespeare workshops. But ultimately, at the core of your question, and I think very important part of the work to me, is really bringing the joy of expression, of self-expression, of curiosity, of exploration to as many corners as I can get to. I really love that.
And because I know you just got back a month ago and watched that, you said, Ellen, And I'm particularly drawn to the story that's called The Quilt, because it's a symbol of our communities, of our world. You know, we're not in this one little patch. We are attached to, you know, so many other segments. Tell me a little bit more about this piece and how it came to be on the page and then on the stage.
Sure, I will. And I also want to say that when you mentioned diversity, equity, and inclusion, my book is coming out in April. It is Theater Response to Social Trauma Around the World. We have essays from around the world, and it's part of the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion series of Rutledge. All that's to say is that that really embraces all of us. We all need to be part of the effort of inclusion, of celebration, of exploration. So how this came about, this particular thing, I was in Urdu literature, but what intrigued me perhaps more than anything when I started doing the research on her, she has novels, she has films, and many, many short stories. But what intrigued me was her background. She grew up and she was born in, I think, 1911. It was long before the partition. So it was part of the subcontinent. She was in the northwestern part of what was then India under the British mandate, the British rule. And she, in this really conservative society, said, hey, guess what? I'm going to get educated. Parents, you don't like it. I'm going to switch from being Muslim. I'll go to a Christian school. They said, okay, never mind. Go to school. Go to school. So she went to school and then she said, okay, I'll get married, but not to anybody who doesn't let me be 100% who I am. And I really don't care. And she did. And she, in fact, I should back up, she has had nine siblings, and she insisted that she was going to do what the boys did. She played football, or soccer, whatever. And she went horseback riding. She did things that were unheard of for anybody, much less young girls in this place. And she made her entire career, her whole trajectory, about battling women's illiteracy, which is enormous still. I mean, 40% of Pakistanis are illiterate. The economy is horrific. My focus, to the extent that my focus is on women, is because I think that women are the levers of social change. I believe this is about everybody. I don't feel that I'm particularly, yay women. No, yay human rights. Yay freedom. Yay really an equality that embraces everybody. But women, in many ways, not only have we all suffered from patriarchy for 5,000 years, but seriously,
it still exists. We'll get back to that. I want you to finish this.
But
this
the thought story for me is that really the levers of change really reside with women. And I believe that's why the impulse, and this is true everywhere. I've been everywhere I've seen. I had worked around the world. I worked in Israel, which I was very happy with. And at that time, that was when there was a real chance for peace, because there was there's only going to be one resolution to this. Everybody knows what it is. Yeah. That was on the table in 1999. Palestinians and Israelis were thrilled when I was there again in 2000. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. The talks collapsed, Taba collapsed, and the same offers on the table. It's not changed in 30 years or 25 years. That said, that the notions of the kinds of diversity is such an impoverished word. The differences among us are wonderful and beautiful if we could embrace them and if we could work through and with them. So that, to me, worked in Israel, in Afghanistan, where I observed a theater company that was going in and interviewing women in prison. Women were in prison in Afghanistan because they'd been raped, because they'd been sodomized. I mean, it was absolutely astonishing. And one of the contributors to my book was the head of a theater company, theater and film company there, who trained young women and young men to do social action theater around the country. This is the kind of work. I was in Iraq a couple with Yazidi IDPs, internally displaced people. At the second time I was there, it was at a camp in Sharia, a foundation run by this spitfire Israeli woman whom I adore. She created in this community people who had been completely stripped of everything by ISIS. They had people kidnapped, sex slaves, murdered, beheaded. She created this in its 10th year now, I think. And just the work that's happening around the world, of which I'm more a speck on the wall than anything else, but I'm really excited by that. It's only a part of my career and what I've done, but I am truly, can I say, engaged. My curiosity, my passions are engaged with where just the light, that's what illuminates.
And both of us are connected in regards to the art of teaching playwriting.
Absolutely.
You know, we go back to Young Playwrights, Inc., which is how we got reconnected. Thank you, Katrine, for you, for making that connection. I'm curious about how you worked with these graduate students to create this piece. Were they already familiar with playwriting? I'd like to learn more about that process. What were the steps? How did you get from point A to point B?
Most of them, although they're artists and really fine artists, most of them had no experience with theater, certainly not with playwriting. And what we did was, but they had heard of, and some of them knew Chuktai's stories, and she's very, very well known. And I selected five short stories that I thought were really interesting. And I worked with, we had 24 students, and I worked with them on Zoom in groups. And each group assigned to or had chosen one of the stories. And we talked it through, and we talked about the themes, and we talked about the characters, the relationships. And then what I did was create a scenario, so like a sort of mini script for each story. I said, okay, here's, you know, let's, what do we do? I asked them first, and then we continue with this. What do we do? First of all, we need to know the story that we're telling. Each story is what we're doing on stage. This is a story. Then we worked, so this is just the script development part. Then we worked on, well, okay, characters, who's essential, who's doing what to whom, what are they doing? And that's one of the hardest concepts and one of the most essential, of course, for all of us in theater. What are you doing? I don't care about from someone else and what you do to get it.
And to that point also, you know, it brings in, I don't know if you remember, the activity called The Need to Tell. One of the important points that you made, Ellen, is what separates, I think, playwriting from other art venues is that with a play, there is an urgency.
Yes.
Happening. It's happening now, you know, in the present. And I'd like you to talk about specifically one of those characters and how you worked through and address those questions. Who are you? You know, what are you doing? And what makes this day different than any other day that you have to tell this story?
I love it. You mentioned the urge, the need to tell, the urge, urgency, they're connected. Absolutely. Why does it matter to you now? Perhaps the story that touched me perhaps most, because I loved all of them, was called The Veil. And it's about a woman, a bride. Actually, when we first see her, she's wearing a widow's veil and she's shrouded. And then the story happens. And the story is basically that she is betrothed to a young man who is dissolute and not worth her time and who's afraid anyway of marriage. And who basically, when he sees her, climbs out the window and flees. I mean, right? And then he lives this really dissolute life for 20 years and he comes back. But what it's about is very simply at the center. He wants her to lift her own bridal veil. That is not, she does not want that. She wants him to do it. And she refuses. She does it silently without speaking. And the question, and she never says a word. The only thing at the very end, when he dies from his dissolute life, he comes back and he dies and he's sorry. But her need to have a real relationship with him, to have someone she could love and cherish and care about, at the very end comes out in her exploding almost like a volcano. She's on the floor. He reaches and touches her hand and she takes his hand and puts it down and holds it for a moment. And then is this big explosion. So how do we know now we've crafted the events? Where is she? She's never said a word. Well, what happens is this explosion of grief, and she bangs her hands and breaks her bangles, which is a traditional way to express grief. And to get to that place meant exploring why this mattered. 20 years, it doesn't say that, we imagine 20 years of waiting, refusing to bow to what this man, it's nothing, I mean, he's not a horrible person, but he's young, he's scared. Interestingly, also the story, and this will sound like a tangent, but I think it's important. The story included a lot of references to how fair and pale she is and how dark skinned he is. And I was very uncomfortable with that. We had long talks. I said, I don't want to include this. And they said, oh, no, you're wrong. And they were right. Colorism is a huge part of our society. And this is a critique of that. And it is now I can see it. So that too engaged discussion of beyond what cultural knowledge I had. My discomfort was hiding the fact that this was a very important part of the story. So
very powerful,
right? Exploring and getting through these layers, and then asking through our work, not in quite, but the actress playing that role, where, what her history is, who she is, why this, what is she thinking for 20 years when she's married and the guy climbs out the window whenever he sees her, he's like, see ya. So what does this mean for her? That leads to explorations that I think are the way to get at, the way playwrights, actors, all of us get at the inner life. Who are you? Contained in that final moment, she could not give in to him, but she also remains basically a virgin, which she didn't want. I mean, she did not have a life because she couldn't go down that path because he didn't respect her as an equal. Does that make sense?
And that's the core
yeah.
of all of our existence as human beings yeah. is to realize we are all human mm-hmm. beings and that we all feel and express ourselves in that community. What you talked about in this story, Al, has so many different layers of meaning and speaks to so many issues. And I'm wondering, this graduate student who played this character, we know how the arts can be transformative. Was her life changed? Was her view changed as a result of experiencing this workshop?
That's a great question, and I don't know. And I say that honestly, because she in particular, all the extremely savvy, clear, knows. I was so educated by all of this group of them, but we didn't discuss how you changed. Her heart and soul were involved in the writing. Ultimately, they did these stories in Urdu and translated them for me. I wrote, they fixed, they changed, they added, detracted, changed, whatever they wanted, and then translated. So I knew what was happening, but I don't speak Urdu, but they're all fluent in English. It wasn't that. It was just, I can't tell you. I can only tell you how I change. I don't know. Anything else to me is rhetoric. Have you changed? Of course I've changed. I don't know. But what I do know is that that level of engagement that frankly most of these students had with their own visual artwork, which is very successful and really wonderful artists, was deeply resonant with, consonant with the work they did on stage. And many of them said to me afterwards that they had long wanted to do stage work and intend to continue. As for deep spiritual interchange, I have no way of knowing that. I can only know that I experienced that intellectually, spiritually, physically, through work in theater. And I can only share that in the ways that I know. Do you know?
Yes. And we'll talk more about your book. You mentioned another important point, and that is how the learning is mutual. I taught high school and I taught college at all different levels. And, you know, students will come back and say, oh my God, you know, you changed my life. I am today, had it not been, you know, taking that theater class, you know, in high school, that graduate course at NYU, whatever. And I'm like, you gave as many lessons to me as whatever I was able to get from you. Could you share a course of this workshop?
I need to expand my vision because I'm still a little close to that. And there was some of teaching. There's been lots of that. I have been blessed to have students that I've stayed close to for decades, right? And many over the years, surprise, hi, you may not remember me. I'm like, yeah, I do. Yeah. And then you changed my life, right? I know. But I'm afraid I'm such a solipsist. I'm going to have to talk again about my own experience because it's all part of a whole thing on a play that is about a woman who is really looking at end of the world, end of me. She's trying to understand what it means in this last chapter of her life to have deeper spiritual connections, to have some sense of what it means, what she's doing with herself. And this leads to really interrogations of God and of each other. It is changing me. The writing of it changes me. I can only share that process and experience really the kind of elation that comes from that. Last night, I know this is a tangent, but I'll say anyway, I saw Bill Irwin, whom I adore.
I love him. He's one of my favorites.
Oh my God. So he's did on Beckett, right? And this is a man who, first of all, I have to say, he brought up that he had a longtime friendship with Joe Chaykin. And I seem to have been the only person in the audience who knew who Chaykin was. I gasped. And he looked right at me because I was sitting right and he said, someone I was actually, Chaykin, when I was like 14, I saw completely unexpectedly Joe Chaykin doing Beckett's Endgame on 14th Street and 7th Avenue, where Alternate U used to be. Anyway, that was Living Theater, had their quarters there for a while. I wandered in because I hung out there and I changed my life. I said that I'm like, I just want to do whatever he did. I'm like amazed. I can't articulate that. I can only say that it's an uprushing of, just elation. It's like joy. Yeah, that. And
it's cathartic. That's what, yes, that's what theater does.
It does. Yes.
It opens our hearts and minds. And, you know, Ellen, this is my mission here, is to have people like you share their personal experience with theater, with creating art. And if only, you know, we can get everybody to sit in that room with a Bill Irwin, with an Ellen Kaplan, you know, and say, give yourself a break, people. Open your hearts and minds.
Being at his performance of Chaykin's or so many is really just a complete openness, like water just flowing through a transparent vessel. Absolutely exquisite. Clowns. So, you know, and now as we're talking, a million instances of teaching and being with younger students flow through me, and it's so exciting. I will say the most recent work I did with a former student is a young woman who produced and directed a play that I wrote, adapted from a book. It was done in New York at the Actors Temple, which is an off-Broadway house. It was just done in September. But the work, which we did every word, every breath, every moment. And this was Nicole Raphael. Her work was brilliant as a director, 100%. But what I'm getting at, it's the engagement, wrestling really moment by moment together. What's being said here? Why is it being said? The collaboration on this really heart-to-heart, mind-to-mind level was fantastic. That's the kind of dedication to and specificity that I hope to get with my students, that I often do. And this was a perfect example of it. This work has certainly, I mean, I know it's changed her life, not just this play, but the work that she's done in theater as an equity actress and as a director and as a Jewish educator. But it's that level of commitment, connection, and collaboration. We're not just in it by ourselves. In it together. So there are too many examples in my mind of that, but that's what I love. That was the space of joy for me.
Yes. I want to go back to where you are now, because I so relate to where you are at this stage of your life.
Right.
And we can commiserate on this. People will say to me, are you retired? And I will say, I'm retired from teaching high school theater, right, and from teaching at the college level. And now I have reinvented and evolved to be a professional New York City actor and a podcast host, and now almost author of about Stephen Sondheim's Young Playwrights Festival. And it's a continual evolution for over 30 years. And you just recently retired from Smith. And it's just another stage. You know, talk a little bit about that.
Happily. Let me say that if I could go back to how I got interested in theater outside the building as well, because that leads me to where I am, the kind of work I've done around the world and in prisons and stuff. So let me say that and it'll lead to now, if that's okay. The esteemed director ran, and I played Mother Courage at the Bardavon Theater, which was a 900-seat opera house in Poughkeepsie, God knows. And it's a gorgeous, amazing play, and Larry was a brilliant director, and I don't know all of this stuff. But we did it, at least in part, it was in August, and that was fine, and we had audiences, but it hit me. Here's this play that is this incredible critique of war, of capitalism, of, you know, I mean, it's a political play. And it's funny, and it's music. But at the end, of course, audiences would clap, and there'd be lots of applause. But I could feel that as they were going out the door, up the big, long ramp to get out of the playhouse, that the whole experience had evaporated already. Oh. And it was just really clear to me. It was like, wait, don't you want to change the world now, right? And part of the work we did, we got training, and it wasn't drama therapy then, but because they didn't have, but we got a lot of training. We did a lot of work with Fresh Air Fund kids and elders. And it occurred to me that I wanted some of what I do to really address the larger world that I live in. So that has been really since I was in Philly, since Young Playwrights Festival and worked with arts and special education, so since the 80s, that has been a part of what I've done, working in prisons, working with literacy, working with pre-GED, working with adjudicated teens, and I could go. Then I was an equity actor, I was a director, I do this stuff, and I also started writing plays, that's really important to me. But so I was teaching, but what I'm getting at is that there was always this balance between the work that I was doing sort of inside the building, right? And with students and as creating theater and bringing that further afield. That's been going on since the 80s and I've loved it. So when I retired from teaching, which 40 years of teaching was plenty, it was good.
But it was a good run. Yeah,
I was done. Yeah, I was fine to be done. And I, you know, through the pandemic and all of that on teaching on Zoom, I'm like, you know, I could really do something else. But the retirement, as a retirement, meant to me, well, doing something else. People laugh at me, like our new neighbors, right? They say, you retire. I say, I can't, I'm going here, I'm doing that, I'm working on this. They say, but you're retired. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so what I want to close with is that notion that you are constantly reaching out. I loved what you said. You know, you're working inside the building, as it were, but you want to bring what is inside that building and bring it out to the entire world and to the community. And I can't wait to see what your next chapter is going to be like. Thank you, Ellen, so much for being here with me and sharing your brilliant work and ideas.
And you are phenomenal. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Find out more about what Fran is up to. Go to her website at firstonlinewithfran.com. This program was produced by March Hare Media and recorded at WeChief Studio Productions.